in the 7, in the 70s, I L I lived in a commune, a community in Massachusetts for of 300 people.
Not, no, T, O, today, it would be D, F, C, A, called an C, U, L. Today it would be called a cult. There was a R U rumor that the leader did not SH shit.
That was a lot of waiting for a really good ending.
But then the TR truth was RE revealed. He did shit, but it did not stink.
Truly a enlightened being, I would suggest. Good leader. He was ahead of the pack. All right. Well, that I might have to rewrite my song. I don't know. The one exception.
O. O. T. H. O. O. Those. C. U. Cult. All those cults. Is your L A label a cult?
A one-man cult.
Your S I T, your site, L O, looks like a C U cult. Site.
My site looks like a cult?
Cult site.
A cult site. Interesting. Totally happenstance. I have no idea why there's that correlation for you. But so be it.
They can see check it out. Now everybody's going to run and have to check this site out to see why you're
saying they'll be disappointed.
It's splinteredtree.com.
Splinteredtree.com. It's all one word. And it's an umbrella website for most of my musical activities. So there's an area for the recording studio. There's an area for Splinter Tree as a performer. There's an area for my DJing persona. And then we have a whole different thing for the band. So
DJing persona. Can. May. Maybe. A. One. Man. Maybe a one-man cult.
That's what it is, yeah. I'm not really looking for members, but, you know.
Do. How. Did. This. Cult. Start.
Long time ago, I guess it started when I started playing guitar, and I was 14, and that was about 17 years ago now.
Where were you?
St. Louis, Missouri. Mm-hmm. That's where I grew up. And then I decided to kind of pursue music when I was in Vermont for college.
My C U cult was in Massachusetts.
I like Massachusetts.
N E A near V Vermont. It was near the part of Massachusetts that's near Vermont.
Oh, in the Green Mountains or the near Greenfield?
Yes. Yes.
In Greenfield.
Near E? Exactly.
My, I went to Greenfield often, but not in the 70s. So I don't know if your cult was still around then.
No. I don't think S. So, I don't think so.
Yeah.
I just reconnected there. Apparently, they're doing a reunion, and so somebody's job was to contact everybody, and they searched Frank out and found him. So he's he's recontacting some of the people he knew there.
You must be an easy person to find.
Yes. Just do a Google. Pages.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well.
What? How? How did you get F from S A I N
St. Louis.
St. Louis to Vermont.
Well, I chose to go to the University of Vermont for my university education, and it was simple as getting in a car and going there once I was accepted. That was in 92. So.
A. B. A baby.
Yeah. Thank you. I'm trying to hold on to that status as long as possible. I can feel it fading. I'm happy to be a baby.
S. So. How did the C. U. The cult. Develop.
I had a epiphany. I had a night of divine intervention, and
like all cult leaders.
I think he's on to me. No, it felt like I was about to finish college and I was trying to figure out what to do with my life. I didn't know. I just knew I didn't want to study anymore. And then I was thinking about my life. And I was up at 4 a.m, couldn't sleep, totally just pondering life. And I received virtually the entire structure of everything I've done since then in music. Like, I thought about it all within a night and got a vision about how I wanted to live my life and pursue music and such.
How did you want to live? How did you want to live?
I wanted to live as an artist, pursuing creative paths, as opposed to, say, making money or going into... I was studying science in college, and I decided I didn't want to be a scientist. And I thought about what gave me happiness in my life at that point, and it was essentially music. That music and friendships and things that are, real. So I realized that at that point, I understood that music was what I was here to be doing, and that's the way it's been for the last, 15 years? Something like that.
Before that, were you in B.A. in bands? Before that, were you in bands?
Yeah, I was in a couple that were... One was mostly just rehearsing, because we didn't get that good. And we never got... We got one show, and we played 2 songs. But then another band was kind of a beat poetry jazz group that played the coffee shops in Burlington, Vermont. And we had a good time.
Oh, you, our, see, our cult, B, A, our cult's band, played there.
In Burlington? What, in the 70s?
Yes.
Before my time. It's a cool town, though.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Were you in the band? Yeah?
No. But I was a dancer.
Cool.
When I A P appeared at the commune on their D doorstep. Frank hitched a ride there from Santa Fe. And so the people that had given him the ride just dropped him off. And they weren't, there was no forewarning that he was coming
right,
or anything. He was just there. And it put people through a lot of changes about what did they do with Frank.
Yeah.
But then their big leader came and kind of gave everybody the word that Frank was really cool. and then it shifted. And that... D A. That day, they, H, A, they had, A, F, R, E, free, concert, in, N, O, R, north, F, I, nor, F-I-E, Northfield? Yes, Northfield. Do you know
I never heard of Northfield. Mm. I know Greenfield, but I never lived over there, so.
Four. I and I S started dancing in the audience, but and the C O M M commune P people S T O stopped me. Because it was too weird or something.
Too weird for a commune? Jeez. Well.
T. Not. S. P. It wasn't spiritual.
Oh. Oh, really? It's good that they
the
know.
The fact that you were just dancing at all wasn't spiritual, to be dancing to the band. C. Wow. And A C R I and a Crip.
A Crip.
Being because Frank is a Crip.
Oh, a cripple.
It was something not right about that, that he was dancing.
Right. I'm sure it was very challenging for people that hadn't experienced that before.
But the C cult leader thought it was great and
right.
encouraged you to do it. He P you put me on the stage at Carnegie Hall. When they performed at Carnegie Hall.
Wow. I'm envious.
We rented. They rented Carnegie Hall.
Okay.
But still,
well,
they get to say they played at Carnegie
yeah.
Hall. What's the difference?
Yeah, I do that all the time.
It. C O N F confused the F the C commune people.
You're dancing.
The fact that the cult leader pushed you on stage and to showcase you dancing confused them because they thought it wasn't spiritual and
right.
not okay. So why is he doing that?
I hope they learned their lesson.
W. Well, they K. kept being C. O N confused.
That's too bad for them. I don't think you were confused though.
No. S so how did you S-T, start being a artist?
Well, part of the vision that I received, the divine...
As cult know, leader.
I've never had it framed in that way, but now that I hear myself talking about it. Well, the vision was, if you're a professional musician, which is what I wanted to be, then you had to make records. Like, that was the first step I decided. So I'd been singing and writing songs on my own, and then I found a small studio in Vermont, and I, right at the end of university, and I went there and spent $400 and in 4 hours recorded a whole album of just guitar and singing, and I decided that was the way to start a music career. So I made some tapes, you know, just the old tapes, and gave them to my friends, and now I listen back to that and I can barely listen to it because it's so bad. It's very very rough recordings, but that was my decision, that I needed to make albums and let the world know that I was here and I was making music, and that was the beginning. And I decided Splinter Tree Records was the label. I decided Splinter Tree was my performing name as a songwriter. And
where did that come from?
It came from a song I wrote with that image in the lyrics, and I, for some reason, understood that imagery to kind of accurately describe my inner state, or how I felt as a person, as someone who is fractured in some ways, but also drawing from many different branches, in a sense, of being very diverse in the background and influence of my music. So it was a combination, but it felt like me.
S-O. So. M. So you. M. A. Made. R. Records.
Right.
Did. U. P. Put them in your C L closet. The records that you made, did they get put in your closet?
No. I didn't make that many. I just made enough to give to friends and family, and I have a few copies still of the old stuff that is under my bed, which is basically in my closet. But I've, since, you know, as an artist, you're an artist, you move on, you evolve all the time, so I'm just constantly thinking about the present project or the next project, and sometimes the old stuff just kind of languishes in the closet more than anything else.
When we S-T started doing video, everything went in the closet.
Right.
Because there was nothing to do with it. This was like in the 80s. And so we'd make these projects, these movies, and then there'd be nothing to do with them.
Huh.
And so they'd end up in the closet. And for all we knew, that's kind of where they... Yeah, I mean, we'd show them to people. Like,
right.
You know, if you'd meet somebody, you'd show them or
right.
something. But, and then it really wasn't until, you know, the whole internet thing and then public access.
Sure.
We pulled everything out of the closet. 30, well... 20 years of video.
Yeah. Well, for me, I think about the old stuff, particularly my first two albums. I now kind of think of it as, snapshots of a process that got me to the point where I feel really ready to present my art. So in the moment, I got really excited about each recording and thought this was my best work, and it was at that time. Mm-hmm. But now I look back and I think, well, those aren't really going to be of much interest to many people because they're so rough.
H-E-A-I-M-N-T-O-R-O-U-G-H. R-E-C-R-E-C-Y. Recycling.
Rough recycling.
Not rough. The rough was wrong.
Oh.
Oh, you're into recycling. Rough works, though? He's into recycling.
Meaning you're interested in the recordings, or?
Well, anything that we've ever made ends up getting worked into what we're doing currently.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, the songs aren't dead. I look forward to resurrecting the material from then. And just doing it better or differently or, yeah. That's just, it was part of a process to get me where I am now.
Like, I just see you cut. Oh, right, that poem? Mm-hmm. The poem Frank wrote in the 70s that was really, it's, you know, like this thick.
Mm-hmm.
He just cut it up into, I don't know, like 30 poems or something. Mm-hmm. He just went through the poem and broke it and gave titles to each section.
Right.
And he's like sending out each little section. People go, wow, what a great poem.
You never do know.
It is... See, called L A lazy.
Oh, it's called being lazy to cut him up. Well, I think it's being smart. I mean, I don't. Some artists, they don't regard their old work with any respect, and they just consider it trash and never look back. And I'm more like you. I think everything I've done has value to somebody. You just got to package it right.
It is a 1-W-H-O whole W work. Oh, your life's work is just one whole work.
Right, right. Exactly. It's hard to remember sometimes, but that's the truth. Mm-hmm.
S P O so the C O N T E context K keeps changing.
Mm-hmm.
But I would like to have your old work.
Sure, it needs a place to go. I'm happy to give it to you.
Oh, you out F R O from under the bed. Out from under the bed.
Yeah, it won't take long to find them. I keep it all well organized for just such an occasion.
S. Oh, so what was the N E next S stage? What was the next stage after we were at you recording your music to let people know that you were doing that? And how did you get M.O. money to make the recording?
Well, the recording process, the first record was done very quickly because I couldn't afford a lot of time in a real studio, so I was working a job and just put some money aside for this very important project, and then I decided to invest in my own recording equipment. So the second album was done on a little four-track, you know, the little tape four-track machines, and that was the beginning of my experience as a producer, learning how to record myself, manipulate sound, develop, my own recording, so I don't have to pay someone else a bunch of money. And then the next stage really was to come to San Francisco, because in that vision, I realized I wanted to live in a city that had an artistic scene and a lot of inspiration of fellow musicians. And
how? Why not in New York?
New York didn't appeal to me as a city. I figured there was only three or four cities that were really good for music: New York, LA, San Francisco, and I didn't even know what the other options were. Chicago.
Nashville.
Yeah, but I didn't want to live in the South. I wanted California. The San Francisco reputation drew me here, and I've been here 8 years, and I've never regretted coming to the Bay Area. It's fit me really well. So,
why has it fit you?
Why? politics are in line with my thinking in general. The pace of San Francisco is right. Like, New York to me is too crazy, and LA is too business oriented. Like, instead of art, it's about business.
Yes.
And San Francisco felt, by reputation alone, I've never been to San Francisco. I felt like San Francisco held more of an artistic credo to the scene that was happening here, you know, based on the past, like 60s music scene, the beat scene. I mean, you just heard about San Francisco being that kind of a place.
Yes.
So it offered me the right things of culture, social outlets, similar mindsets in the music community. I think it proved to be right.
What was the N.E. next step?
So I came here, and I was already a DJ as well as a songwriter and a singer, so I started pursuing my DJing really intensely.
What kind of DJ?
Well, I play a really wide variety of styles of music. I guess many DJs consider themselves a hip-hop DJ or a house DJ or a funk DJ, but I like most of those. I like most kinds of music, so I wanted to play in the clubs for big dance floors of people, and I was really passionate about drum and bass, which is a certain kind of dance music, and pursued those kind of avenues as much as possible, and started doing shows with friends as a songwriter, and started recording another record with a friend of mine. So I just started living music full time as much as possible.
People don't think they can do that.
I think they're wrong. I've become better and better at supporting myself in a completely artistic lifestyle, but it took a long time to develop the right balance of work.
And how do you do it?
How do I do it? Well, for one thing, DJing has become a very good way for me to make money. I DJ 2 or 3 times a week usually, and generate income that keeps me free in the daytimes and many nights to work on my music or rehearse with my bands or play the shows. And I sent you some CDs that have really wide spectrum of all the different kinds of music that I've been producing. So I keep my day job stuff to a bare minimum. I'm very lucky.
What is your day job?
I work on a funeral boat.
What is that? This is like when I A.S. asked Luna, right, yeah, when Frank does performances, a lot of the times part of it will be going around to the audience and just asking them what they do to kind of like weed out the audience, get rid of people who want something hot and glamorous. He kind of, he says he uses the art of boredom. So one time in, we had a series at UC Berkeley, and he was doing that, and we got to this woman, Luna, who we later became friends with, and when he said, "What do you do?" she said, "I'm a dominatrix." And that was, this is a long time ago, and we had no idea what that meant.
Oh, right.
And so it was like funeral boat is like a similar kind of thing, like, wow, something we haven't heard of.
Yeah, it's an interesting career. It's not a career. The captain is a friend of mine, and the story goes, I had a friend tell me that that was a great album title. The captain's a friend of mine. But I, when I need a job, I go to my community first and ask my friends and acquaintances if they know of anything. And I asked my friend, who is a captain of boats on the bay, if he needed any help or knew about anything, not suspecting that there was a job on his boat. And he works, the boat is owned by the Neptune Society.
Yes.
Which is, you know what it is. And
but maybe you should say for those who don't.
Well, it's an organization created for people that want to be scattered at sea. When they pass on, they want their remains to be scattered. So the boat is offered as part of the organization's services for families that want to participate in that and actually do the scattering themselves. We sometimes get people that don't have family members left, or they happen to, like, maybe they donated their body to science, and then we'll just do those on our own. But the interesting part about the job is when we go out with families, and today I was on 2 trips, so it's a fascinating thing to do, and I really love it. I think it's probably one of my favorite jobs yet in my life of many jobs. So That's what it is. I help people go through that process.
One. K. E. Key. Two. Being. A. A. Artist. Is. To. Get. A. Day job. Like that.
Well, it's a very poetic environment to live in, and I sang at least one song tonight that I drew inspiration from that experience in the writing of the song. So I think in that way it's a particularly appropriate field of work to be in. Yeah. It's inspiring.
How did you S.T. start the L label?
The label started more as a hypothetical concept. I mean, I made the albums, and I put on the artwork Splinter Tree Records, but it didn't exist.
Like most things.
Right.
In art.
Right. It was an idea, and it was very clear, and then when I got here, I decided to actually make it legal. So it exists. Well, it used to exist. But I went 5 years in the city of Oakland with a business license for this record label that never made a dime. And eventually the city of Oakland started sending me notices saying, listen, this is an inactive business. You're not doing anything like money-making, and we're going to revoke your business license. And at that point, I had spent 5 years paying business tax for something that I was already paying my own money to run, so I just closed it.
I did not know be it is oh, it is I illegal to have a business that doesn't make money. He didn't know that.
It's not illegal, but they decided that for them to do the paperwork every year of renewing a business that was that defunct was a waste of their time, and they wanted me to close it. And it was better for me. It's just hypothetical again.
Hey. They could have B. O. Bought a record from you, and then it
went. Yeah, they should have made an effort at least. Help the cause. Well, I brought something for you. I brought a gift as thanks for having me, and it's my new album that we're celebrating this next week at the Utah, and I still put Splinter Tree Records on the artwork. That's the label that put it out in my mind, but who knows if the label will ever grow beyond my own recording.
Oh, wow. What does it say? I can't see it in this light. What does that
Sweet
say?
Leaf Boys.
Sweet Leaf Boys.
And that's
Boys.
The album title is Songs from the Holy Fool. Because most of the songs on this album are pretty tongue-in-cheek, kind of lighthearted. Like that song about safe bet, like I can, about all the advertisements on TV and how they try and get you to buy things, right. Or shit do stink. It's kind of a silly song, but it's got some content.
Would you, is that okay? Would you pee, play at the lover benefit? We're putting on a benefit for lover in May at Burnt Ramen, which is a an underground club in Richmond.
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard about that.
Yeah, it's a great place. One of our favorite places.
Cool.
And Frank's wondering if you would do a set at that. It's, what's the date of it? May 5th, maybe?
That might be a problem.
May 5th. It's Friday, May 5th.
Did you mean me, or did you mean the band? Or either?
Either.
The band has a show the next night. So I'll have to ask them if they want to do two in a row. But probably I can. I need to double check. But thank you for offering.
Yeah. Great. But is it illegal to do BE benefits that don't make money, that always lose money?
Oh, shoot. Well, it's just a bad benefit, I think.
We've never done a benefit that's made me money.
Oof, yeah.
But that's okay with us.
Okay.
That's okay with us. But
well, that's too Frank's bad.
Frank's wondering if it's illegal, though.
It should be illegal.
Like record companies.
You should, right.
Record labels.
You should always make money at a benefit for a non-profit like this.
N-E, never, F-I-G, figure that one out. We've never figured that one out, how to make money.
I can relate. I've never made money on any of my CDs. It's just, you do it because you have to do it. You know, you want to do it.
I don't R-E-A really know anyone who's made money at their art. Is that what you mean, or at benefits? Both, kind of both. When you said you've never made money on any of your CDs,
yeah.
We've yet to meet anybody like in the show here that says they've made money off of the CD they put out.
Well, you know, that being said.
Wait, one.
Oh. There's a story behind this.
There's one guy that his whole, you know, he took this like marketing workshop these how to market yourself tapes and stuff.
Right.
And so he insists that he lives off of the money he makes with his music, and that he just bought this house. And you know, he had a lot of stories about it.
Did you not believe him?
But the M, the math just didn't matter. I mean, on the show, of course, we're like, you know, like accepting it. But then afterwards, we started talking about it and said, wait a minute.
Right.
You know, if you really start adding up what he's saying, there's no way that he could live off of that. Let alone, like, buy a house in the Bay Area.
You'd have to sell so many CDs.
Yeah.
Well, I think that being, you know, there's the part about throwing your money into your art endlessly, never knowing when you're going to get it back. But there's also moments of of payback that I've had in my short career, and it feels great. It just doesn't come anywhere near the balance. So I think maybe over time.
It is not L I N linear.
Right. Right. Yeah. You're right. And in some ways, I think you just have to look big picture. You know, you have to look at the whole spectrum of your life as an artist or as a creative person to see all the ways that you generate income. It's like I generate a lot of income as a DJ now, and I made an investment in the records and in the skill and the knowledge of how to do it well, and I've well made my money back on those investments, you know, over time, doing it a lot.
That seems really good.
Yeah, I mean, it's that's an amazing success for me.
Yeah. My, us, two, how do you mean? How do you mean? Well, we certainly, you know, we live the life that we want to live.
Right.
So
right.
I guess in that sense.
We always have enough
money. This we is, never have a lot of money, but we live in a house.
Plenty.
Yes.
I can see lots of abundance in this house.
Yes, exactly.
And you're living
exactly
the life you want.
Two. H. We have actually two houses. We have a house down the street.
Hey.
We have no money and we have two houses.
I don't have any money or houses. This is a great model, you know. I'm all for it. Yeah, I think it's important to remember the abundance that we have in our life, even though we might be focused occasionally on our absence of wealth.
But we live off of free food.
That's good.
But it's organic.
That's really good. You're eating better than a lot of people that have tons of money.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
People get T-R-A trapped in L linear
thinking.
Like they think if A B E benefit doesn't make money, then it's not a success.
Right. Right. You're right. And I could easily say to myself, well, I made all these CDs and I only sold this many and I only made that much money and I didn't recoup my expenses, but that wasn't the point. You know, I mean, the point is the process and a commitment to a creative life. So,
if we TH thought where can we SH show all those videos we were making in the 80s. Mm. But we didn't. We just kept cranking them out, even though they went in the closet.
Yeah.
Never thought about it like
that. Yeah, you were in the process of creation.
Yeah.
Despite a lack of avenues.
Yeah.
That's what we have to do. Yeah. That's what I think. I agree. You just keep going.
But N E W new P O Poets? No, POS. Possibilities? May? B? I? Illegal? New possibilities may be illegal? M. I. Mikey. C. O. M. P. Oh, Mikey's company. Oh, New Possibilities Design. Right, so Mikey does graphic design. And, you know, he does have a name, New Possibilities Design.
Right.
And it is a business, right? You have a business license and everything.
A seller's permit.
A seller's permit.
I had one of those.
Yes. But hasn't made money as a designer really for years. When, you know, when the .com thing dried up, that's when we stopped having any income from that.
Yep.
And, So that's what he's referring to. Yeah.
I can relate.
S. So, what is the new PR project?
Good question. The Sweetleaf Boys is ongoing, and you know, we made the commitment to create this product that we want the world to know about and listen to, so we're going to work on making that known and heard and appreciated by as many people as possible. And for me personally, I'm going to this year try and finish a album of hip-hop music that I've made. So that's a different thing I do. I'm also a rapper.
M.
Deep thought.
C. O. M. Come back. Oh, onto the show as your rapper persona.
Great idea. I'll let you know when I'm ready. I haven't done one performance in that realm yet.
H. Hey. We. Are. We do. We are. The P E R F perfect A U audience for a new N for a N E never before T R tried A act.
Are you safely speaking for everybody?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I think you're right. I think this would be a great place to spread those wings. When I'm ready, I'll let you know.
F U N funny. We have L O lots of hip hop on the show.
Yeah, I read about one of the
Firewater was the most recent one.
Yeah, and they kind of came in as a family.
Yes.
Yeah. That sounded neat.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I understand you're doing everything here. That's good. I'm on the similar page. I kind of consider myself to be a 360 degree musician, no limitations, so it's nice to have a venue to bring anything.
What is your SIT site? I'll give your site again because we're wrapping it up.
Okay. the main website is splintertree.com, and that's splintertree.com.
The C U is that the cult? No, the cult.
It's the cult
website.
And there's another page for the Sweetleaf Boys, which is at MySpace, and it's myspace.com/sweetleafboys. So you can go there too.
The C U the cult that is L A B E labeled A L label. The cult that is labeled a label.
Right.
Splintertree.com.
A matter of perspective, I guess.
But it does not E X, but it does not exist. The cult that is labeled a label, but it does not exist.
That's very existential.
B E A beat. He said very beat.
Very beat, exactly. It's like, what is that? The howl?
Yes. Okay, so
all right.
That's a wrap. Bye bye.